time to get underway with Radio Friendships. Stay tuned as your hosts, Don and Sandra Tipton, share exciting news about what God is doing throughout the world in this missions-minded radio broadcast.
Welcome to Radio Friendships from Port Mercy in Lake Charles, Louisiana.
You know, it's possible for two people to be looking at the same thing, and one of them is getting the wrong idea of what he's looking at. The Bible warned us that was going to happen. Knowing this verse, there shall come in the last days scoffers. Did you know there are people that scoff at the Bible? They scoff, it says, because of their lust. There's no scientific reason for them to reject the Bible. They just don't like that book because it chaps their hide. We don't want God telling us what to do. The Bible says they did not like to retain God in their knowledge. For this cause, God shall send them strong delusion. Anybody that believes they evolved from a rock 4.6 billion years ago, I would say is strongly deluded.
Well, that's where we left off last week with Dr. Hovind of Creation Science Evangelism. Now, we highly recommend that you visit their website at drdino.com. But for now, let's continue in this series of exposing lies in the textbooks.
Second Peter goes on to say, where is the promise of his coming? That's what the scoffers are going to say. For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation. That's an important phrase. The scoffers are going to say, the way things are happening now is the way they've always been happening. Long, slow, gradual processes. The Bible says the scoffers are willingly ignorant. In the Greek, that means dumb on purpose. They're willingly ignorant of how God made the heavens and the earth, and they're ignorant of the flood. The world was overflowed with water and perished. One of the scoffers in the last days was a guy named James Hutton. Now, James Hutton lived in the late 1700s. James wrote a book and said the earth is millions of years old. You know, you need to understand, in the late 1700s, most people believed the Bible, or at least they were strongly influenced by Christianity, and everybody thought the earth was about 6,000 years old. That was the common teaching of the day. They taught the kids in the public school, you know, God created the world in 6 days. But this was also a time of many revolutions. We had the American Revolution, the French Revolution, the Polish, the Spanish, the German. Every country is just about revolting against the idea of a king and establishing a democracy. So they threw off monarchy, and this is known as the age of anti-monarchy. So the Bible says to honor the king, and some people thought the Bible was an obstacle to their political objectives, and they wanted to discredit the Bible. Keep in mind, this all happened early 1800s and late 1700s. So back when everybody thought the earth was a few thousand years old, James Hutton came along and said, oh no, it's lots older than that. And it got here by uniformitarianism. Uniformitarianism means the present is the key to the past. No, James, I think the Bible's the only perfect key to the past. But during this time frame, the Christians, instead of fighting against this new teaching of millions of years, they swallowed it. The Christians accepted the idea of a gap theory, or day-age theory, or progressive creation. They just accepted millions of years right into the Bible, when it's obvious to anybody with half a brain and one eye reading the Bible that it does not teach the earth is millions of years old. That's not what it says. So, the Christians did not put up an effective resistance to this teaching, and they allowed the church to believe all this. And then when evolution came out, 1859 became popular with Darwin's book, well, the Christians just accepted that too. Boy, what a tragedy. That book covers the great turning point in history. James Hutton's book that he wrote had a real strong influence on a young lawyer from Scotland named Charles Lyell. Charles Lyell, in 1830, wrote this book right here, Principles of Geology. In this book, you can see his hatred for the Bible kind of ooze off every page. He kept calling it ancient doctrines. He said, oh, you have a scriptural authority. He was mocking them, okay? He called it a religious prejudice. He said, men of superior talent, he's talking about himself, who thought for themselves and were not blinded by authority, he used every opportunity he could find to mock the scriptures. And kids, you won't have to go to college very far before you're going to run into a professor that has this mocking attitude toward God's word. Seems like their whole goal in life is to destroy your faith. Well, Charles said his goal was to free the science from Moses. What do you suppose he meant by that? Well, before Charles Lyell wrote his book, everybody looked at the geology, looked at Grand Canyon, and said, wow, look what the flood did. He didn't like people interpreting Earth's history in light of the Bible. He wanted them to interpret Earth's history in terms of millions of years. Lyell is the primary guy responsible for inventing what today is known as the geologic column. How many have ever heard of the geologic column before? They divided the earth up into layers and gave them names, you know, Cenozoic, Mesozoic, Paleozoic, Archaeozoic, all that kind of stuff. Maybe you saw the movie Jurassic Park, named after the Jurassic layer, okay? Each layer of rock was given a name and an age and an index fossil. Now keep in mind, all this was done in 1830 before there ever was a carbon dating. Potassium-argon dating, rubidium-strontium dating, lead-206, uranium-235, uranium-238, none of those had even been thought of. So they didn't determine these great ages by any radiometric decay method. They just picked the numbers out of the clear blue sky. It's a fact the Earth has many layers of sedimentary rock. That is just a fact. How'd they get there? Well, there are two interpretations. One group says the layers formed slowly over millions of years. The other group says, no, these layers are all from the flood in the days of Noah. And again, they're always trying to erase that line between the two and make their interpretation become part of the fact. And it's just not. It's just their interpretation, that's all. The geologic column is actually the Bible for the evolutionist. The only place you'll ever find it is in the textbooks. It doesn't exist. This guy admits it. He said, if there were a column of sediments, unfortunately, no such column exists. Did you know there is no geologic column? If there was, it'd be 100 miles thick. It doesn't exist. One of the lies in the textbooks, and actually all of evolution, is based on this lie right here. This is one of the most serious ones, in my opinion. It's true the Earth has layers. That's not the question. How did they get there, though? I mean, if that layer sat there for 10 million years waiting for the next one, don't you think it's going to rain once in a while in 10 million years? Why are there no erosion marks between the layers? Why are they stacked on top of each other just like a stack of pancakes? And by the way, why are there no soil layers between the rock layers? I mean, soil builds up on top of rock. Don't you think there'd be some soil built up once in a while? Look, if you get a jar of dirt and rocks and gravel and sand and mud and shake it up and set it down, it settles into layers for you in a few minutes. It doesn't take long. How many have seen those things you buy at the mall with two pieces of glass and different colored sand in between? You know, you flip it over and it makes all kinds of layers just in a few seconds. It doesn't take long. I was preaching years ago in Union Center, South Dakota. It's not even on the map. Well, there were 40 people in the whole town. 38 of them came to church. But boy, we had a great meeting, and the preacher said, hey, Hovind, let's go down to Rapid City. They've got a bunch of dinosaurs in the museum there. I said, all right, I like dinosaurs. Let's go. So we all drove down to Rapid City. We came to this museum, and a guide met us at the door. He said, hey, folks, would you like me to give you a tour? We said, that would be great, sir. Well, the first place we stopped on the tour was the geologic time chart. They have it lit up, and it's behind glass, and it's holy and sacred. Don't dare touch that thing, you know. So we're standing over there, and the guide said, now, folks, this layer of rock right here is about 70 million years old. And it's so cool, because they always get that sanctimonious tone in their voice, you know, 70 million years old. Well, my daughter was 12 years old at the time. She said, mister, how do you know that layer is 70 million years old? He said, honey, that's a good question. We tell the age of the layers by what types of fossils we find in them. They're called index fossils. And by the way, that's correct. That's what the textbook says. Scientists use index fossils to determine the age of rock layers. She said, thank you, sir. We walked around the other side. We're standing over here, and the guide said, now, folks, these bones are about 100 million years old. My daughter raised her hand again. She said, sir, how do you know those bones are 100 million years old? He said, well, honey, we tell the age of the bones by which layer they came from. She said, sir, when we were standing over there, you told me you knew the age of the layers by the bones, and now you're telling me you know the age of the bones by the layers. She said, isn't that circular reasoning? I thought, wow, a chip off the old block. That guy had the strangest look on his face. He looked at my daughter. He looked at me. I wasn't about to help him. I thought, wow, this is going to be good. I have got to hear this. He looked back at my daughter. He said, wow, you're right. That is circular reasoning. He said, I never thought of that before. That fellow drove 50 miles one way that night to come hear me speak in Union Center, South Dakota. Afterwards, he talked to me for an hour. He said, Hovind, is everything I believe about geology wrong? I teach this stuff at the college. I said, oh, no, I like geology. I've got a huge fossil collection, rock collection, mineral collection. I teach earth science. I love studying geology. I said, but as far as the layers being different ages, I said, yes, sir, I'm sorry. That is all baloney. It's based on circular reasoning. I'll show you. Here's a textbook that tells the kids to date the rocks by the fossils, and on the very next page it says, date the fossils by the rocks. On the next page, and they don't catch it. It's a lie. It's circular reasoning. The intelligent layman has long suspected circular reasoning in the use of rocks to date fossils and fossils to date rocks. The geologist has never bothered to think of a good reply, feeling the explanations are not worth the trouble as long as the work brings results. It cannot be denied, from a strictly philosophical standpoint, geologists are arguing in a circle. The relative ages of rocks are determined by the organisms they contain. They date the rocks by the fossils and the fossils by the rocks. Ever since the beginning of the 19th century, fossils have been and still are the best and most accurate method of dating and correlating the rocks in which they occur. Apart from very modern examples, which really are archaeology, I can think of no cases of radioactive decay being used to date fossils. They don't date fossils by potassium-argon dating or carbon dating. That's not how they do it. Radiometric dating would not even be possible if the geologic column had not been erected first. There's no way simply to look at a fossil and say how old it is unless you know the age of the rocks it comes from. This is Niles Eldridge, one of the most famous evolutionists alive today. He said, and this poses something of a problem. Yeah, something poses a big problem, Niles. If we date the rocks by the fossils, how can we then turn around and talk about patterns of evolutionary change through time in the fossil record? Circular reasoning. This guy said the rocks do date the fossils, but the fossils date the rocks more accurately. I think the cheese done fell out of his sandwich. That's what I think. Okay, he's a few fries short of a Happy Meal. It's based on circular reasoning, okay? This guy said the charge of circular reasoning can be handled several ways. It can be ignored as not the proper concern of the public. It can be denied by calling down the law of evolution. It can be admitted as a common practice or avoided by pragmatic reasoning. But it is all based on circular reasoning. Actually, at the Scopes Monkey Trial, 1925, over here in Dayton, Tennessee, this is what they were going to use as evidence for evolution. The lowest layers are obviously the oldest. Page 275 of the court transcript. No, the oldest layers are not obviously the oldest. Did you know in still water, sediment layers settle out the bottom one first, and then the second one, and then the third one? That's correct. But in moving water, you can get 5 or 6 or 10 layers to form simultaneously. They form from one end and travel across. So it's possible to have a fossil on the bottom that is younger than a fossil on top, if it's moving water. There's a great video tape called Experiments in Stratification. It covers all that if you want more on that. I like to ask evolutionists, I say, guys, your geologic column contains limestone quite a few places. If I handed you a piece of limestone, how would you know if it's 100 million year old Jurassic limestone or 600 million year old Cambrian limestone? I mean, exactly what's the difference? They'd say, well, the only way to tell the difference is by the index fossils. That's precisely my point. They date the layers by the fossils. This textbook shows the kids a trilobite, and it says, boys and girls, trilobites make good index fossils. If a trilobite is found in a rock layer, the rock layer probably formed 500 to 600 million years ago. I don't think so. Somebody found a human shoe print where the guy with a shoe on had stepped on and smashed a trilobite. They asked evolutionists all over, how on earth could a human step on a trilobite? If trilobites lived 500 million years ago, and man didn't get here till 3 million years ago, and didn't start wearing shoes till 10,000 years ago, how could a human step on a trilobite? One atheist said, well, it's obviously. Answer would be that aliens visited the planet 500 million years ago. Oh, them aliens will do it every time. Another guy said, well, maybe there was a large trilobite shaped like a shoe that fell on a small one. Now, there are some big trilobites, okay, but I don't think they're shaped like a shoe. Actually, the trilobite has the most complicated eyeball ever. Trilobite eyes are unbelievable. And this is one of the first creatures to evolve, and it already has the most complex eye, which just the eye is one of the most complex features you could have. No, trilobites are not index fossils for anything, okay? There are all kinds of different types of trilobites, and there probably are some still alive today. Certainly the Baltic isopod is still alive. A guy sent me a couple months ago, I guess, a whole jar full of trilobites from the Prudhoe Bay water treatment plant up there for the oil refining rig. When they arrived in Pensacola, Florida, they were still alive in the jar. But I don't know how to keep a trilobite alive. They all died, but we got them in our museum there. Somebody just sent me a large one that they got down in the Caribbean. It's in our museum, and it was frozen. They said, yeah, I pulled it off the rock myself down in the Caribbean, still alive. This textbook shows the kids a graptolite. It says, boys and girls, this is 410 million years old. I don't think so. Graptolites were found still alive in the South Pacific 10 years ago. So if you find graptolite, you can't use that as an index fossil for any age rock. They tell the kids in school the lobe-finned fish is the index fossil for Devonian. 325 million years old. See that short leg, boys and girls? He's got a little bitty leg and then the fin. Ah, see, that proves he's evolving from a leg to a fin. No, that's a lie. The lobe-finned fish are still alive today. They're swimming around the Indian Ocean. And when they caught the first one in 1938, the scientists looked at it and said, wow, would you look at that? They survived for 325 million years. It never dawned on them once to question the geologic column. That thought never crossed their brain. You don't question the geologic column. It is holy and sacred. You just have to say it survived for 325 million years. It's in the textbooks today. And they still say it's the index fossil for 325 million year old rock, even though they know they're swimming around the ocean. How can they be that dumb?
Well, we're going to have to take a short break here, but when we come back, we're going to continue exposing lies in the textbooks.
God's Navy is in need of your help. Friendships is an international Christian relief organization based at Port Mercy in Lake Charles, Louisiana. Our ships sail with humanitarian aid, disaster relief, and medical missions to many nations. Short and long-term positions available for adults of all ages. There is no cost to participate. This could be what you've always been looking for. For more information, check out our website, friendships.org, or call Port Mercy at 337-433-5022.
And now a word from Don Tipton of Friendships Unlimited.
If Jesus were to come in here to take up a collection, and he were to walk up in front of you with those nail scars, with those great eyes that knows everything about you, there is nothing about you that he doesn't know or love, brother, you'd be reaching in that wallet, you'd be giving and taking rings off and anything you could find, put in that basket. But the great I Am, the great giver himself, who held nothing back from you, not one drop of blood. What would he want you to put in that basket? You think it's your money? Do you think he wakes up in the morning, looks at the paper, says, does he end up the pound down? Am I strong in Europe? Can my kingdom move forward? Get a hold of who you're serving. It's not about money. How much of you would you pour into that basket? That's what he wants to know.
For more information about Friendships Unlimited, go to www.friendships.org. And now back to Dr. Hovind with Lies in the Textbooks.
You're going to be told that dinosaurs are index fossils for the Cretaceous 70 million years ago. That's baloney. Dinosaur bones were found here recently that had blood cells still in them. How long are the blood cells going to last? Here's soft tissue found with dinosaur bones, still flexible, soft tissue in March of 2005. Here's fossilized human hands found in the same rock strata as dinosaur bones. Now, they tell you the layers are different ages. That's simply baloney, okay? Now, Charlie Darwin didn't like round numbers, so he said the Weldon deposits are 306,662,400 years old. Oh, how could he possibly know such a thing, okay? All over the world, petrified trees are found standing up, connecting these different rock layers. Petrified trees standing up. Now, how long does a dead tree stand up around here before it falls down? 5 years, maybe 10 years? 5 million? Oh, no, not 5 million, that's for sure, right? But yet petrified trees in the vertical position are found all over the planet. And they're running through multiple layers, and the kids are being taught the layers are different ages, and yet here's one tree connecting them all. I'm having a hard time believing these layers are different ages. Central Alabama's got a large coal mine with a whole bunch of petrified trees standing up running through two seams of coal, the Blue Creek and the Mary Lee. Now, they're going to tell you in school, for coal to form, a forest has to grow, and then it all falls over and turns into a swamp, and then it gets buried, and then new mud washes in on top, and the coal slowly forms from the forest that was buried. And then thousands of years later, another forest grows on top, and a whole new layer of coal formed. So if you find two layers of coal, oh, that took thousands of years. That's what they'll tell you in school. That's simply baloney. We'll cover more on coal formation on video 6, but if you look at the samples of trees found in this coal mine, you look at sample A, B, C, D, E, F, G, I mean, any freshman law student could tell you, hey, folks, I think I can prove these two coal formations formed at the same time, very quickly, within a few weeks or months of each other, that's for sure, probably during the flood in the days of Noah. In Cookeville, Tennessee, there's a coal mine with petrified trees standing running. Here's coal at the bottom. The tree is coalified at the bottom, petrified in the middle, and coalified on top, where it went through a second coal seam. Same tree. By the way, why are coal seams generally found on top of layers of rock or clay? Wouldn't it be a pretty poor place to grow a forest? Ought to be on top of soil, don't you think? Yeah. Polystrate fossils are found all over the world. In Joggins, Nova Scotia, there are dozens of petrified trees standing up, connecting different rock layers. People, scientists go up there and look at them and just say, wow, that's curious. No, it's more than curious. It's devastating to your teaching that the layers are different ages. There's a brochure you can get from our bookstore. It's $2. It's got 30-some pictures of color pictures of petrified trees in the vertical position. Occasionally, the petrified trees are found upside down, running through many rock layers. Now we really got a problem. The evolutionists have two ways to solve this. They can say, well, Hovind, you know, the trees stood upright for millions of years while the layers formed around them. Or the trees grew through hundreds of feet of solid rock looking for sunlight. There's a third way to look at it. You know, maybe they were all buried in a big flood. Mount St. Helens blew thousands of trees into Spirit Lake. Lots of those trees are stuck in the mud at the bottom of Spirit Lake. They're going to petrify in the standing position. It doesn't take long for things to petrify. Here's petrified firewood. The guy chopped on it before it turned to stone. Here's mummified dog stuck in a tree. Turned to stone. Here's petrified cowboy boot with the cowboy's legs still in it. The boot was made in 1950, and the leg is turned to stone. Here's petrified fish giving birth. It does not take millions of years to give birth. Here's a petrified hat. Petrified pickle found in a jar. Here's petrified sacks of flour found in a flour mill that flooded in 1910 in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. Here's petrified toadstool. There's an amazing gem and mineral museum just south of Bloomington, Illinois, in a little bitty tiny town called Shirley, Illinois. You got to be trying to find it to get there, but it's worth going to see the Funk Gem and Mineral Museum, okay? Here's petrified acorns. This kid sent them to me. He said, Brother Hovind, I was 7 years old at the time. He said, I stuck these acorns in a bucket of water, and I thought they might, you know, sprout and make some trees, and I forgot about them. Next spring, my mama found the bucket on the back porch, and the acorns had turned to stone. He said, would you like them for your museum? I said, of course. Come on down and see the petrified acorns. So kids, when they tell you the layers are different ages, you tell them, Kent Hovind said, they're confused or they're lying. It is not correct. Those layers all formed, nearly all of them, at the time of Noah's flood. 80 to 85% of Earth's surface does not even have three geologic periods appearing in correct consecutive order. Even though this geologic column does not exist, except in the textbooks, that teaching is what changed people in the 1830s away from believing the Bible to believing in uniformitarianism. This teaching especially affected a young preacher. He just got out of Bible college, studied to be a pastor of a church. His name was Charles Darwin. Anybody ever heard of Charles Darwin? Charles Darwin graduated from Bible college to be a preacher, and he's going to sail around the world for 5 years first and collect some bugs for some, you know, bugologist back there in England. Charlie brought some books with him. He brought his Bible, of course. He just got out of Bible college. And he brought this brand new book, Principles of Geology. Charlie said that book changed his life forever. He later wrote to a friend and said, disbelief crept over me slowly. I felt no distress. He slowly lost his faith in the Bible. As Darwin sailed around the world, he stopped off at the Galapagos Islands. Here on those islands, he noticed there were 14 different varieties of finches. Little tiny bird with a little tiny beak. But the beak shapes were different. Now the Grants went there and studied them and said, wow, during dry years, the beak is a tenth of a millimeter thicker, and during wet years, it's a tenth of a millimeter thinner. But it always averages back out. A tenth of a millimeter, do you know how much that is? Not much. Darwin looked at the birds and said, you know what? I think all these birds had a common ancestor. I bet you're right, Charlie. It was a bird. And then Charlie said, well, maybe this proves that birds and bananas are related. You say, oh, he never said that. He sure did. I knew you wouldn't believe me, so I brought his book. It's right here. The Origin of Species by Charles Darwin. On page 170, Darwin said, it's a truly wonderful fact that all animals and all plants throughout all time and space should be related to each other. Isn't he saying the birds and bananas are related? He sure is. This is a lie. What Charlie observed is what is sometimes called microevolution. Microevolution tells us dogs produce a variety of dogs. That's a fact. It happens, okay? And roses produce a variety of roses. Nobody argues about that. The question is, does it go any farther than that? You may get a big dog or a little dog, but you get a dog every time. And probably the dog, the wolf, and the coyote had a common ancestor. I wouldn't argue about that. We did the test this morning. Had a 5-year-old girl. Said, okay, here we have a dog, a wolf, a coyote, and a banana. Which one is not like the others? She got it. The banana. We got college professors can't figure that out.
Thank you for joining us today on Radio Friendships. Join us next Wednesday when we continue with part 3 of Lies in the Textbooks. Until then, have a great day and God bless.
Thank you for listening to the Friendships broadcast today. Don and Sandra Tipton invite you to join them again next time as we stand in awe of the great God we serve. Friendships is based at Port Mercy in Lake Charles, Louisiana. For information about Friendships Unlimited, dial 337-433-4444. 5022 or go on the internet to friendships.org.